This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 167. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. So we begin this week's show on a sad note, as I'm sure you have already heard the sad story of Tom Maynard passing away, the Surrey and England Lions cricketer at just 23 years old. And Mark, you knew him well.
I knew Tom pretty well. There's lots of people around Millfield School where Tom went to school that know him a lot better than me. But obviously I got to know Tom mostly through doing a little bit of coaching with him, but mostly through being on tour with his dad, with the England setup, and Tom coming out on tours when the families would come out. So got to know Tom pretty well, but more so know the family very, very well. And obviously all of our love and thoughts and go to the Maynard family. It's really, really sad time.
Yeah, it is. And he was certainly a player who was sort of earmarked as someone for the future, wasn't he? And, you know, he was kind of seen as someone who had that touch of talent that we all try and hanker after.
Yeah, he definitely did. He was very similar to his dad in that way. And his dad was incredibly talented as a cricketer, and Tom very much followed in the footsteps of Matt in the way that he played and the way that he went about his cricket. Very aggressive, very attacking as a batter, good mover, fantastic athlete, very similar to his dad. And he had a really good first year at Surrey, performed very, very well, had a good strong Lions program in the winter, performing well on that, not just on the field but also demonstrating his character and how he is as a person, which impressed a number of the coaches there as well. And you know, things were very much looking up for him, and it makes it even more sad really that you know, he couldn't fulfill his dreams. Yeah, really sad time. It's hit the school very hard here. I'm looking at the flag is half mast at the moment and probably will remain there, I should imagine, for a number of days. And no, it's very, very sad indeed.
It is. And of course, he's tied to millions of people who he never met. I mean, I never met him or knew him, only through seeing his, you know, scorecards on the Crick Info and things like that. But what ties him to everybody who is interested in the game of cricket is the fact that, you know, he's a cricketer and he had potential, and people can see that line, and when that line gets broken, you know, from one generation to the next, when it gets broken early, I think that's why it hits people hard, because they think this shouldn't happen, and you have to sort of take solace in the game when something terrible like that happens.
Yeah, I completely agree. And as I say, you know, all our thoughts are with Matt and Sue and Kerry, his Tom's sister, at this tough time. And you can only imagine what they're feeling. But I know that everybody's thoughts are with them.
Let's move on to slightly better news, in that there's a new academy opening in India, which probably every week in India, but this one's a bit of a special one, because this is tied into the Royal Challengers in Bangalore, part of the Karnataka State Cricket Association, and they're opening a series of high level academies. The first one opening in Bangalore, and then they're opening around the state as well, with the aim of improving standards in that part of the world. So, Gareth, what do you think about this initiative?
Well, I mean, we're a little bit scant on detail at the moment, but the things that I can tell you from being out there is that region is a very rich talent area anyway for cricket. Mm. The other thing is they've got some very good people involved in the program as well, and an exceptional person heading up the program in Anil Kumble, so which is fantastic news for the program. And also the idea idea of having satellite academies that link into the main one in Bangalore, I think, is a really good idea as well. Probably the closest thing in England that we can relate to it is having links into the non-first class counties for some of the county academies. And if you look at the composition of the Somerset Academy over the years, a number of Cornwall, Devon and Dorset players have migrated up into the Somerset Academy and then gone on to play first class cricket within Somerset and on occasions with some other counties as well. So it's a model that's very well thought of, but often isn't put into place particularly well. And I think in the Royal Challengers template that they've put together, they've got a great opportunity to use those satellite academies to the best advantage and make sure that nobody slips through the net.
Which can be a problem in India, I think, more than anywhere else, especially with the cultural idea that if you don't pick up cricket quite early, then you have to go off and do something else, you know, get your degree in business or something like that. So a lot of late developers, I can imagine, sort of vanish from the game fairly quickly unless they can get into some kind of an academy and make it through. So to have that structure in place is only going to pick up more talent.
Yeah, I agree. And also the distances are so big, aren't they? And without these satellite academies in place, people would have to be travelling hundreds of miles on often not particularly good travelling routes to be able to get some quality coaching. And often that wouldn't happen as a result of those logistical issues that sit in the way. So to have those satellite academies means that the distances for anybody, even the ones that are out in the sticks, to get in will be less. And obviously that they'll get caught up in the net. And if they're good enough, then they'll progress, which is exactly what you're looking for. You know, you don't want to miss anybody out through not being able to have contact with them.
And I know we don't know that much about the way the academies are going to be run. If you were put in charge of an academy like this, how would you go about sort of identifying those talents and making cricketers who could go on to the next level? What's you know, if you imagine you're the director of this, what's your first job? You sit down, it's Monday morning, the academy's open. What's your first job?
Well, I think the first thing you need to do is define what your age grouping is that you're looking for, and sometimes academies start a bit too young, I think. You know, and if you're starting at 12 years old or so, you've got a lot of time before you're actually going to be playing within a professional setup. And I know there's been some anomalies in the likes of Tendulkar and such like in the Afridis and people like that. But in the main, you know, people are going to make their first class debuts around 21, 22, as opposed to making them at 15, 16. So, you know, I would probably say my academy age grouping would be no earlier than 16. Maybe my satellite academies could be slightly younger, so I'm picking those main people up when they're 16 after they've been within some programs or some slightly lesser programs in satellite academies. But the first thing to do once you've defined your age group would be to ensure that you you know what you're looking for, and doing some really good profiling on the players that come in. And the profiling can include fitness testing. It can include skills testing now, which is becoming that much more refined. Mm. It can be you know, measuring speeds, measuring lengths, measuring accuracy, measuring the ability to get the ball into gaps as a batter, measuring catching. And I'd want to get some good data down, but also to get a bit of a feel from the people that are doing the watching and the observations of what they think of each person as well, as a person through talking with them. And I'd want to interview each player as well to get an idea of what their aspirations were and what their motivations were and what they can give to the program, as well as what the program can give to them. Then you can start to make slightly more educated decisions rather than just watching somebody and going, oh yeah, I think that person can play and I don't think that person can play. So getting information, I think, is crucial.
Yeah, and really only part of that is the scores that they're putting up, right? I mean, yeah. There's so much more detail that you can go into now, especially with the way we're moving towards standardized testing, which is an interesting area, which we'll probably get into in another show. It's such a large topic, but it's a great initiative, I think, and I hope it bears fruit, because it just goes to show that if you do put the investment in, then hopefully you're going to get some talent out off the back of it. And I think you can only do that with good quality facilities and good quality coaching, which it looks like the Royal Challengers Academy is going to have.
Yeah, well, that's it. And, you know, we've always said that if India got their act together, then they're going to be dangerous in terms of their player development. And this looks like it's along the right roads to doing that. And, you know, if they can replicate that around all of the states and all of the major centres of cricket with these satellites operating in the more of the outreach territories, then India are only going to benefit as a cricketing nation.
How does that tie in, speaking of coaches, how does that tie into coach education? Because there isn't a great history of formal coach education in India, is there? So how do you think something like this, which is trying to formalise an academy structure, how does that tie into having a formalised coaching system as well?
Well, it's something that they've worked on a lot, and actually they've been doing a lot of the Australian cricket boards coach education programs throughout India in the last 5 or 6 years, and one of my friends is one of the key people who brought that system into play. So they're taking, you know, a best practice example, not necessarily the best practice example, but a best practice example from Australian cricket into their into India, and they ship over people to run the program, and they've had a huge take up, in particular at level three, which is probably where most of the coaches within this particular program are going to be in terms of their coach education. They'll probably be level three coaches, people that have come out of a first class game in India and can get onto a course and learn about the ways of coaching, as well as obviously the technical mental stuff, but also the manner and how you deliver coaching, which some players don't always get from their own experiences in the game. So I should imagine that Australian level three that a lot of the states have been using within India is going to be the place where they get the coaches out of for these particular programs.
Well, I hope that it all ties together well, because you know, India is such an important part of the world when it comes to cricket. It's the centre of the cricket world now, isn't it? And I think certainly in certain parts of India there's a lack of a structured system, and that means that people who dream of playing for their country, they dream of playing the IPL, aren't getting a fair crack of the whip. So if this structure can get into place properly, then that's only going to be good for all those people who are playing cricket in the street and desperate to put on that Indian shirt.
Definitely.
Okay, so it's time for us to delve into the mailbag. And there's no Berners this week. He's off on cricket tour, by the way. Last I heard, he was under a bar stool somewhere. So I'm not sure how many runs he's getting, but he's certainly putting in the effort at the bar. So that's excellent news. This week I'll be in charge of reading the questions in his absence. And of course, the best question of the week was a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So the two questions this week, the first is from Rutedge, and he says, most club cricketers practice on a mat in the nets where the ball bounces significantly more than on a grass wicket, especially when the ball is coming through reasonably fast. This means that a ball that you would pull on grass is often too high to pull on a mat. How do you recommend we approach batting on a mat so that we can replicate batting on grass? And I suppose this is indoors and outdoor artificial surfaces.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting one, but it's one that's probably impacted upon people not just in India but also in England as well this year, because we've had such wet weather. A lot of the practice has been confined to artificial surfaces and indoor. Yeah. And certainly for ourselves here at Millfield, we've been practicing in the bubble, our indoor facility, for probably too much of a time this summer. So if I'm throwing on there, obviously the ball does bounce more, but what I'm trying to do is condition the players' minds as well as their techniques to being able to transfer the skills that we're practicing indoors into the outdoor environment. So if I, for example, bowl a ball on length and they go back to deal with the bounce of the ball indoors, I will still be encouraging them and asking them to come forward to those balls, because we're not practicing to play indoors. We're practicing to play outdoors. So even if a ball hits 2.5 inches higher up the blade than it would do if it was in grass wicket, we know that we can take that batting shape, for example, out onto the grass wicket. So I think front foot play is the one thing that generally gets isn't transferred across from indoors to outdoor play or matting to grass play. But it's a case of programming the mind that that's what you're going to get. The level of a bounce of a ball is going to be at this once you get outside. And as a result, we need to make sure that when the ball goes into length indoors, we still come forward to it. Equally, when the ball goes back of a length indoors, we go back to it, you know, so the same things applies, and it's just about conditioning the mind, really.
Yes, it's slightly a leap of faith. It's always going to be if you're talking about a different surface, aren't you? I mean, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, and unfortunately it's a really important part of, as you say, Gareth, front foot play is to know when to go forward and when to go back to a certain length, and then how to play the different shots depending on how high the ball is, because if the ball is bouncing higher, then your hands are going to have to be higher when you're driving, and if it's bouncing higher on the back foot, you know, maybe that pull is going to look a bit awkward if you try and pull a ball that you've been pulling successfully in the nets and and it goes under the bat because it doesn't get more than 2 inches off the ground on a wet one in Britain in May. But the way that I approach it is to try as much as possible to be outside, of course, but have set up the net so they're less about the technical side of it specifically, and unless you're doing throwdowns or something like that, and more about the game scenario side of things, and the way that you're mentally preparing for batting, and that includes the very, very important element of seeing bowlers bowl, because you can't really get enough of that. I mean, you know, that's what this expensive pro batter system that England have in available to them, which has a video of the bowler running into bowl when they use a bowling machine. So, you know, and that's but you can also have that just by having a real bowler bowl. so if you're learning, and that's really important for picking up line and length early, especially when you're learning the game, the more clues you can read from the bowler's action, the better you get at picking up line and length early, which is one of those questions that we get all of the time. The other thing that is a really good tool to use for indoor play is the BatX system that we have on Pitch Vision Academy, which plays the audio of how many runs you need to get off each over. And that just gets you thinking in the rhythm and in the game situation. So, I mean, it's split into 20-minute blocks, or just over 20-minute blocks, different match scenarios, different field settings, and you can play as much as that or as little as that you like. And it's even set up to, you can bat in pairs, so, and you can do it with a group session and things like that as well. So it's designed even for every coach and every player, from a one-to-one situation with a bowling machine through to a squad session when you've got, you know, 12 or 14 people there that you need to get through the batting. So I'd say look at those two elements as well as what Gareth has said. Okay, so the next question is from Michael. And Michael says, I'm a spin bowler, but my captain is always reluctant to bowl me. The most common way of me getting a bowl is when it's 30 overs in, and both batsmen are set and having a slog. I can't get into a rhythm and find my length when the bloke at the other end is charging me. I may get the odd wicket, but I go for plenty of runs, which decreases the captain's confidence in me even more. What should I do to prove myself and consequently get more overs?
Well, I'd suggest the first thing, and captains and bowlers, it's an interesting one. We used to have this at Hampshire years ago, when Mark Nicholas was our captain, and everybody wanted to have a bowl at him in the nets because When they were running up and bowling and proving a point against him, it gave him an opportunity of putting him in his mind's eye for a selection.
Right.
So if the captain doesn't have that confidence in Michael at the moment, I would suggest, well, get and bowl at him as much as possible and actually prove to him through his own performance against the captain's own performance that he's worthy of getting on to bowl first and foremost. So without doing anything technical, I think that's a really good opportunity. Instead of sort of shying away from bowling at the captain, get more and more overs under your belt with the captain in nets. So you're actually very obviously impressing him rather than relying on him to make sure that he's watching you. If he's facing you, he's got to watch you, and he's got to watch you hard. So I'd say that's the first and foremost thing to work on. The other thing is that, you know, you're looking to strive to hit line and length. Well, if you are bowling in those that 30 post 30 over period, then actually not hitting line and length all of the time is something which will be a huge asset. And learning to vary your pace and hit length, it sounds as if you're hitting length at the same pace all the time, and as a result people are lining you up and then you're going for a few runs, and you can still hit your lengths but taking a bit of pace off, bit of pace on, and just varying your pace from that good length that you hit. Also then every now and again putting balls a different length so they have the opportunity to try and size up a different length of delivery. Most of the time people are looking to come at you in that 30 overs, coming down the wicket using their feet. Well, a bit of natural variation is a good thing. So instead of being sort of challenged by the situation, take it as a real good opportunity to pick up wickets. Learn to vary your pace from that good length as much as you can, so that the ball arrives at the batters at different times, and you'll find that you'll pick up more wickets and you'll cause the batter more problem. Then, as the confidence of a captain to bowl you in that period increases, you'll probably find that you'll be being brought on the 20th over, the 15th over, and then all of a sudden the game changes and you can just stick to what you know and build up your confidence through just hitting lengths at the same pace. But it's very important in this modern game that spinners can actually hit that length with two or three paces of delivery. They become their own mysterious balls in themselves, even though all you're actually doing is delivering the same orthodox ball that you always have done.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying there, Gareth, to take a step back and look at the overview, is that you have to be clear on what your role is in the side, because there is... If you want to be on in the 15th over and you see yourself as that kind of spinner, but the captain sees you as the guy who comes on in the 30th over just to give the seamer a bit of a rest for a couple of overs before he comes back for the last 10, then you know, you have to take that on board. It might not be the role that you want, but it's the role that you've been given. So you have to get on with learning the skills that are going to get you through that particular challenge. I mean, you can talk to the captain. You can say to him, look, I want you to. This is what I want to be doing, but you know, the captain has to make that call, and sometimes we have to do jobs in a cricket team which we don't necessarily want to do. So, if that's the case, then you know, you have to man up slightly. And when it's the 33rd over and he tosses you the ball, and the one batsman is on 98 not out and looking to put you in the car park, you have to outthink him.
you do, and obviously the reason why you've been throwing the ball at that point is that somebody else hasn't done their job properly. So that, you know, by you showing willing, by putting in some skills that are relevant to that part of the game, will give you a great chance of usurping the person that hasn't done his job properly previously, because the guy doesn't get to 98 without somebody messing up. And you know, and then you can take their position, and instead of coming on in the 33rd over, you start to come on in the 18th over, and then it's a completely different ball game. But you know, a great saying that I heard in an Auckland restaurant when I was sitting there on my Todd, with nobody with me because everybody had flown home, and my flight was the next day. I heard this American guy say, "Out of chaos comes opportunity," and the reason why somebody's on 98 and another bloke's on 70 is that somebody else has messed up, which provides you with an opportunity to show what you're worth and get yourself into his slot.
Yeah, it's certainly not a losing cause. Even if you have got two well-set batsmen, if they're trying to hit you, if they're giving it the long handle early, then you know you're going to have men out on the boundary. They've got to back themselves to clear those men if they're going for it. And even the best players don't always get it right. So you know you've got a fair chance of picking up a few wickets along the way. Okay, you might get hit you get hit for two sixes and then the guy holds out on the boundary, that's, you win. You know, your average is 12. Well bowled.
Take that. Thank you very much.
So, you know, that's the way you've got to look at it. See it as an opportunity. And I think if you succeed in that role, then you might end up in the role that you really want, as you said, Gareth. So
exactly right.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same for any role in the side, not just the spinner. Although we want to encourage the spinners as much as we can, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, attitudes are changing towards spin, aren't they? And they're not just seen as the people that you can get slogged out of the park, because a number of guys, and not necessarily your world beaters like a Warner or a Muralitharan, have made very good careers of bowling in this period of the game where people are looking to get after them. And going back to my own playing days, Sean Udall was the first person to put his hand up to bowl two of the last four overs in a 40-over game, and most people thought he was mad. But Sean saw it as an opportunity to get some cheap wickets, which would increase his stats, which would give him more opportunity to bowl in earlier parts of the game, and also then to go on and play some cricket for England. And that was the way that he looked at it. And you know, you have to take your hat off to that.
Absolutely. And there's a job here for the captain as well. It's important for the captain to be clear on the role that he wants all his players to have in the side. You know, you don't want to wing it too much. I mean, obviously you need flexibility, but that's very different from understanding what strengths and weaknesses a team has and then fitting the roles of that team as best you can and then being flexible from there. That's very different from going, looking around the field and go, oh my God, who can I bowl now? So it's definitely a job for the captain as well to make sure that your role is well assigned. So definitely speak to him one evening after training and say, look, you know, is this always what I'm going to be doing? If it is, I'll make sure I practice those skills.
So, yeah, and definitely have that conversation when you've just bowled at him in the nets for 20 minutes and you've got him out three times, because it gives you a position of power to go in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is a stage of a show there where one of us gets the opportunity to stand on our soapbox and rant and rave about something that's got our goat this week. And this week it's time for David.
Four words this week. Get on with it. I played a club game recently, and the weather hasn't been so good here in the UK. So we were wondering if we were going to play, but we all turned up to the ground. We were hoping to play. We tossed up in the pavilion. We won the toss. It was a green pitch, which could do with a bit more of a mow, or a bit of a mow in the first place. And we fielded, we all walked out in our whites ready to go. No sign of the umpires, no sign of the opposition batsmen. And I think the umpires had a slight reluctance to walk out into the field, led by the opposition batsmen, who suddenly realised that we could pick up some quick points if they weren't too careful. So we stood out there for about 10 minutes, and then it rained again and we all went off again. But we could have had, I reckon, about 25 minutes of play before the game would have been rained off. So let's just get on with it next time.
I think it's a good adage, not just from playing in adverse conditions, but also practicing as well. And we had a net about a month and a half ago on a very new grass wicket here at school, and it nipped about all over the place. And a couple of the batters that were batting in there decided that they weren't willing to just get stuck in, and they just had a huge mow. And when I talked to them about it, I said, well, what are you doing? Oh, we're practicing for 2020. And I said, well, you know, this isn't a 2020 wicket. We wouldn't play any cricket, and we haven't got any 2020 cricket coming up for the next 3 weeks. This is an opportunity for you to get some robust confidence by getting your head down. You'll get bad balls, you can still score off them, but actually put the bowler under pressure by not giving your wicket away. Anyway, we had quite a heated discussion about it, which was good, and I encouraged that. And we had some new nets this week, which have nipped about a bit. And the same two batters went in there and did exactly what we talked about and what we discussed and the conclusions that we came to. And actually got some real good confidence coming out of the net, even though the ball was darting around all over the place. I followed up with somebody today and had a very similar net. And I had a ball with a good seam on it, so it was nipping around all over. And I said to him, right, I've got to get you out three times in this hour-long session. And then as soon as that happens, we finish the game. And it was one down at the end of the hour. And I tried everything that I possibly could do to get him out in bowler-friendly conditions. So 8 weeks ago, they weren't getting on with it. and now they've learned to get on with it. And I think it's a really good lesson to have, whether it's out of a cricket match or whether it's in practice as well.
Okay, that's all we've got time for on this week's show. But before we finish up, we've just got to do a little bit of housekeeping, as we always do. We've got the competition winner, and we've also got to have our tail ender. So, Gareth, this week we had two questions. One from Rutedge on artificial surfaces and adapting to grass surfaces, and one on spin bowling rolls from Michael. So which one did you prefer?
This week I'm going to go for the spin bowling rolls on Michael. It's a question that we've had previously, and I think we answered it pretty well this time round. So good question from Michael, and hopefully there's some good stuff in there for him to take on, and also other listeners as well.
Congratulations, Michael. And if you're listening to the show and you want to send in your own question, you can do so by phoning us or emailing us. The phone number is 0208 816 7691. And Gareth, you know the email address?
Yeah, it's coach@pitchvision.com.
It is. Our Twitter is PB Cricket Coach. And you can find us on Facebook under Pitch Vision Academy. And you can also find us on iTunes under Pitch Vision Academy as well, if you want to subscribe to the show. If you don't want to use iTunes, then head over to pitchvision.com. Click on the podcast link at the top, and you can find out all the information about subscribing any other way that you like. Okay, so we need a tail ender. And so as Berners isn't here, we're struggling a bit to come up with a term, because Berners is obviously the king of the tail ender term. And Gareth, you were saying to me before we started recording that you don't really get those tail end terms in international cricket. Is that because everyone's very po-faced and serious?
I don't know. Maybe we're just boring lot. I don't know. I don't know how it is. But you know, Berners every week comes in, doesn't he? And he's got a list of them.
Off the top of his head as well. He doesn't even have to think.
Yeah, unbelievable. And then, you know, so I think I've just spent too much time out of the club changing room, to be honest, because we just don't seem to be able to come up. Well, I certainly don't seem to be able to come up with them. And I always learn something new from Berners, which doesn't happen very often. But certainly when he's talking about tail enders, it does. There's always individual sayings, I suppose. But I know when KP is playing well, he refers to if he plays a couple of shots as Pongo Pongo. I mean, that's about the only thing. But it's not one of those classic Berners ones. So yeah, I Berners. Think international game's a bit dull, mate.
Berners has got the trademark. Well, of course, that double word thing has reminded me of Bang Bang, which was that a Michael Vaughan thing?
Yeah, Bang Bang, that's a Michael Vaughan thing. Yeah, definitely. We've discovered some Bang Bang Bangs this year, because obviously the wickets have been pretty nippy abouty, and both when we've batted at Millfield, and also more often it has to be said the opposition have batted at Millfield, that we've had Bang 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 sometimes. So yeah, that was very much a Vaughany thing, and I'm sure he probably heard that in club cricket, to be brutally honest with you, because I'm not sure he'd have come up with that on his own. But there you go.
So there we go. This week we finally got round to one from an international cricketer. The original source unknown, but we're going to accredit it to Michael Vaughan. Bang bang, when you take one wicket, you very very quickly take another one. That's it for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, mate. Take care.